When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I remember sitting in a meeting with them, and I all of a sudden just got this like overcome of confidence. And I was like, listen, I'm going to go direct to supply myself because I can absolutely do this. And you're going to regret losing me as a client. And I walked out and never looked back.
Hello, today I'm joined by the Irish makeup artist, Amy Connolly. I first came across Amy a couple of years ago when I picked up a lipstick by her brand, Sculpted by Amy, and was blown away by the quality married with clever design. That lipstick, by the way, in case you'd like to go and check it out, is called Lip Duo in Pink Pear, and it's a lipstick with a liner on the other end. Very handy, and it's now a staple in my makeup bag. I suspect if you try it, you'll fall in love with it too. After that find, I started to try more and more by Amy's brand and continued to be impressed. Amy came over to mine to record this episode, and I found that the woman behind it is no less impressive. Amy's a savvy entrepreneur who was brought up as an only child solely by her mum, from whom she draws a lot of inspiration. She never took a loan or invested in her business, and she started saving money in uni to fund it. Amy's grit and clear vision has served her really well. Sculpted by Amy is now in its sixth year and has over 40 products in the range. In this episode, we talk about how she's taken a small brand and grown it across the UK, how she now finds balance as a very involved business owner, and just how she achieves that signature glow. Here's Amy.
You told me before we started recording that you were born in 1992.
Yes.
That terrifies me. I remember when the Spice Girls came out, I was a teenager. You were four?
Yeah, wow. I know. I do still remember them though.
Do you?
Yeah, but I probably wasn't a hardcore fan when they first arrived because I couldn't properly speak.
God, terrifying. Right, well, lovely to have you here. Tell me what kind of little girl you were, aside from not being able to sing Spice Girls lyrics when they came out.
I was a spoiled only child, I would say, but spoiled in the loving sense, not in the bratty sense. So it's always just been me and my mom, who is amazing. We're super close. Obviously, we fight loads as much as we love each other. I would definitely say I was a girly girl, although I liked sport. So I would kind of like play football on the street with like boys on my road. But at the same time, I'd go in and put my makeup on. Quite a happy, go lucky, try whatever, see how we go.
Tell me about your mum and you then, because there's so many films that I used to watch when I was a kid about a single mum with the kid and the mum's working and they have this really lovely relationship. And I always used to think it looked really idyllic. Did it feel like that when you were living it?
I think it's funny. I think it's like with anything, you know, if someone's a twin and you say, how is it like being a twin? You're like, well, I don't really know any different. So that was it for us. So I never knew my dad and it wasn't a problem because I never had someone to miss, if that makes sense. So I always say I feel worse for people who've had affairs or separations, etc. So for me, my world was always just me and my mom. So like it was just how it was. It's definitely, I would say, a really special bond, I think, as well, being an only child, because you've no one to share each other with. So that's why I always say I was spoiled, because she had no one else to be proud of. So I got all the emotion and all the attention. So yeah, it was a really nice time. She is a really brilliant role model in terms of work and all those other things that you learn along the way. So yeah, it was kind of just how it was.
There was an incident where your aunt was babysitting you. She thought you were sleeping. Take it from there.
Yeah. She thought I was sleeping. And then all of a sudden she hears this crack and she's like, oh my God, what's going on? I was about 2 or 3 years of age at this stage. And she comes upstairs and they have so many photographs because I thought it was absolutely hilarious to find me having escaped the cot. The crack was obviously I'd broken the side of it trying to get out. And I'd taken my mum's red lipstick and I mean, as if it was face paint, smeared my entire face it and obviously thought that I was so beautiful. Because when she came into the room, she said I didn't even like smile or laugh. It was just like, this is this is my look, like. So I definitely was very drawn to makeup from a young age, like I'm sure most young girls growing up are. You know, you just want to attack your mom's makeup bag and put your fingers in it.
Especially when you see it. There's something so appealing about makeup. It's like painting. And I think if you see someone else doing it, you think, oh, that's a whole other canvas. I could just do that to myself. Tell me about your mum and her skin, because you said that your mum was obsessed with tanning.
Yes. Obsessed with tanning and obsessed with makeup. My mum is someone who will kill me for saying this. And it's so funny because, like, she wears so little, but to her, it's so much. So she'll wake up in the morning and she'll be like, oh, Jesus, I can't cope if anyone sees me without my makeup on. And the reality is, it's like a moisturizer layer. Like, there's nothing on it. So I'm like, it's completely psychological. But she was always very fair skinned like myself. She gave me all her own freckles and no tan. She actually says to me, Ames, God love, you don't have 1% melanin in your skin. And I'm like, thanks, mom. That's going to make me feel so great. But she was always had the same routine. She loved, obviously pre-sculpted, the Clarins tinted moisturizer. Wore it year in, year out, never changed. Honestly, for about 40 years, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And she kept her routine quite simple. She also suffers a lot with redness, not like rosacea, just general Celtic skin redness. And she used to always apply this green cream. And I used to sit and watch her because it would look bonkers as she did it. And then it obviously molds into the skin and tones down the redness. So those kind of little things I would have watched growing up, literally every single morning she did the same thing.
Were there any icons or film stars or people like that that you or your mum were wanting to emulate or looked up to?
So for me, my number one, like to the core of me, who I actually probably tried to dress like way too many times, was Britney Spears. I was wholeheartedly obsessed for about 10 years.
Yeah. I remember when she first came out, it was like the tan, the toned, the whole look. It was so like healthy looking.
And a bit of glitter on the eye. Oh, I was so taken by her. And on the
body. Yeah. Body glitter. Yeah. Everyone's forgotten body glitter. It was a real thing.
It'll make a comeback soon, I think.
I hope so. It was quite fun. Like people used to put like shimmer and then actual glitter on top. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
Right. So you were into Britney. That's who you wanted to be.
Yeah. Love Britney.
And Britney's very tan too. So this comes back to skin colour again. So when did you start fake tanning?
I would say I started wearing fake tan kind of halfway through secondary school. Mm-hmm. So probably when I was about 15. And I've been wearing it every day since.
Do you genuinely put it on every day?
No, I don't put it on every day, but I would generally put it on maybe 2 times a week, and that would kind of last because you'd have the fade out then every few days.
Okay, so tell me what your process is then. What products did you use? Talk me through your tanning journey.
Oh God, years ago, I'd say, like, we used to go into school because you wouldn't be allowed to wear makeup with your uniform in secondary school. So I used to go in like totally unashamedly with like a line that finished on my neck. So I would have a mahogany colored body, a white, red and freckled face, and I would be no bother. Like all of us did, and we all stank as well, because back then tan was very different. So I used to wear the Garnier Ambre Solaire
spray,
the gel.
Yeah.
And you'd be sticky for about 10 hours after you applied it, and it was quite an orangey color, but it was very pungent, you know. It was real, that kind of fake tan smell, and obviously they've come on leaps and bounds since. So I've always been into tan. I kind of go between developing and instant at the moment. In terms of current times and more modern brands, I love the Bare by Vogue, Vogue Williams. I think that's really nice. I think the colour of it's lovely. And then we have our own instant tan body base and sculpted that actually has SPF in it. And that was a complete vanity project, because when I go on holidays, I'm so pale and I hate being pale. I love pale skin, but for me, I like a tan. I feel more confident with a tan. But I love being active on holidays. I love getting into the water or the sea. And then you come out of the sea and you're back to pale again. And it's so distressing. Or I put on my sun cream and it would mess up my tan. All first world problems. Yeah. So I was like, if I can make an instant tan with SPF, tap the bottle.
So do you use that as a sun cream effectively when you're on holiday? You just top it up?
Yeah. If I'm going for kind of tan in the day, I would. And at least then you're covered, because you're putting on a large enough amount of it to make sure that you're getting, you know, all the protection. Okay. But obviously it's instant. Mm-hmm. So it does wash off with a bit of heat.
So did having pale skin bother you actively? Because it sounds like you're really married to this fake tanning thing. If I would say to you, fake tan has disappeared from the world, you cannot get your hands on it and you will not be allowed to bronze, would that knock your confidence severely?
Hugely. I'd be gone from the world. I'd be like, see you, bye. No, and you know what, like, I'm very much someone who's like, embrace yourself, be confident, all that, I'm all for it. But for me, tan is just something that I just need a little bit of to make myself feel more alive and kind of look more alive. And it's not for everyone, and I totally get that. But for me personally, I love it. And I would go as far as saying, and this is awful, but like, it really bothers me on holidays because I like being active. I like being in the water. I'm not like a lot of people would say to me, just keep your tan on and don't get in the water. I'm like, but I don't want to be completely dry. Like, I want to have a nice time. But I would say I think about my tan way too much when I'm away. It's like constantly consuming. Is it washing off? Is it wiping on that white chair that I'm sitting on for lunch? It's going to be brown bum by the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely for me, tan is my thing, and it's completely passed down from my mum.
So what is it about being pale then that if you were thinking of it in your head, is it the fact that it looks washed out like to you? Like when you see yourself looking pale, do you feel like you just look tired?
I think so. And I see some people, like a lot of the girls on my team have this beautiful porcelain skin and they look amazing. So it's not as if it's anyone else's projection. It's purely when I look at myself. I think because I've got freckles as well, and the base layer of my skin is so white, like like I was saying, my mom's, that I don't have any pigment, that I just feel a little bit dead.
That's what I find really interesting about doing these interviews, because I'm talking about your specific beauty journey and how you feel about things. And actually, no one has ever come on this without having some completely random peccadillo where they've said, it doesn't bother me on anyone else, but on me, this is my thing. Yeah. So it's interesting that I think to date, I've never interviewed anyone who doesn't have a thing.
Thank God.
A random thing. So that's your
You'd be like, you're too perfect. You need to leave.
Yeah, you can't come on. Not yet.
Tell me about acne then. Did you have it?
Yes. So when I was growing up, probably around the ages of 15, 16, I definitely suffered with my skin a bit. Wouldn't say it was like very, very strong acne, but at the same time I still went to the doctor, took an antibiotic and a kind of a steroid cream, I think, at the time for it, and I've been left with a little bit of scarring on my left cheek. Nothing serious, but something I often notice more ironically when I put makeup on versus when I don't. I actually had microneedling sessions for it, which I found really good. Yeah. Not so much that I was doing it just for those, because they are quite small, but for kind of my main porous area, which I would be quite around the center of my face, it was very sore but good. Your face is kind of burning for like an hour and then it's just dry for the next two or three days. But you have to literally treat it like a wound. No strong creams, nothing like that.
So you were at school and you were working throughout school.
Yeah. So I got a part-time job when I was 16. So I had 3 years left in school at the time. And that was with Urban Decay Cosmetics. And I worked there every Saturday and Sunday. So I genuinely thought like all my Christmas had come at once. I was the coolest part-time job worker you've ever known. Didn't have a clue how to do makeup. Yeah. Just knew how to sell. So that was unfortunate for the ladies who visited me in my first year there. But it was so amazing. And I always say on so many different levels, like obviously I learned a lot about makeup. I learned a lot about a product. I learned a lot about dealing with customers, but also from a confidence point of view. Like on my first day in Urban Decay, the manager was like, okay, you need to go traffic stop. And I was like, sorry, what now? So traffic stopping is basically you go and hassle the woman who's buying her lingerie and say, do you want to try some mascara? And honestly, when I went up to her, pure gibberish just left my mouth. I think she felt so sorry for me that she was like, no problem, pet, I'll come with you and buy all the mascara. But it was really super for those elements. And I was quite young as well. So I did that for 3 years.
Did they give you product when you were there?
Yeah, so you work on a commission structure. I'm not sure if it's still like that now. But definitely the time we did. So that was obviously, you know, linked to your sales. And then you would get a certain allocation of new products and stuff as well.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Did amazing. You find it thrilling?
Yeah. At the time, it's funny, like this is going back 12 years. So yeah. Urban Decay wasn't like the Naked palette, for example, hadn't launched yet. Yeah. That launched just as I was leaving to go to MAC.
Yeah.
So prior to that, it was a very cool brand, but it was quite like rockish. It was like big, bright colours. So it didn't have the same appeal that it does today, I don't think.
Did they have those glitter eyeshadows?
Yes.
Yeah, because I like those. There's a midnight cowboy.
I used to wear it all the time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I loved it.
That's a really great colour. Yeah. What were your favourite things then that you started using then?
I used to love the midnight cowboy glitter. I used to love the stone pencil. It was almost like a sagey green brown. I loved that on. And they had a really nice pearl highlight. It wasn't so much a cream, it was kind of a hybrid texture, kind of before actually creams kind of exploded onto the market. And that was really nice for a glow in the skin.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then you went on to work at MAC.
I did.
And then you went to study commerce and French.
Yeah. So kind of simultaneously, when I left Urban Decay and made the choice to move to MAC, because I'd been there like 3 years, I kind of wanted to change. I had actually finished school at that stage and was going into uni. So I did commerce and French. When I worked in MAC, it was my first year of uni, but I worked part-time. So again, Saturdays and Sundays.
And did that leave you time to get drunk and be a teenager.
It's funny. I knew at that age that I had to make this decision around, okay, I want to work, because firstly, I had also been financially independent since I was 16. So there's no way I could go back asking my mom for pocket money, nor would I get it, mind you. So I really wanted to keep my job, but I also really wanted to sustain a social life, both in school and in college. So I think I had the superhuman ability to come in from a really late night and just get up and go. And like all my friends would be like, what? Like I did a pajama day today. I ate like three pizzas and slept all day. Like, how are you moving? Whereas when you're in the mindset of you have to get up and do it. And if you don't, you just stay in and have no life. You just go. Now, if I had to do it now, I'd probably die.
Wow. Okay.
But at the time, and I went out all the time.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay. Sorry, so you were a traditional uni, yes, student,
very much so,
as well as working and doing this degree. Yeah. And what were you thinking of doing then? Because you've got makeup, you've got the business side, and you've got the French. Obviously, looking at what you do now, that all makes sense. Yeah. But at the time, what was going on in your head?
At the time, I think I was just really enjoying college life. I loved the friends I'd made. I thought the lectures were fine. I didn't exactly, you know, find them extremely stimulating, but I enjoyed the course. But I really loved makeup. And I would always say that over those 4 years while I stayed working part time, I had built up like 6 years in the makeup industry, which was really cool considering I started quite young. And I was very spoiled in the sense that I had touched on nearly every element that I could to get a taste of what it's like. So I had like TV bits, I was writing a bit, I was doing weddings and general occasions. And I loved the face-to-face of customers, and you know, you're kind of like a therapist / makeup artist. So really when I graduated from college, I knew that I didn't want to leave the business side of things behind, but I also didn't want to depart from makeup because I had grown such a love and passion for it. So for me, the natural thing was to bring the two together.
So what was your first step?
Yeah, people always ask that. And the truth be told, I really didn't have a clue what I was doing. My first step was I'm going to find someone who can produce the product that I wanted. So I was so focused on what the product was, what I wanted the whole ethos of it to be, you know, the consistency, the texture on different skins, all that kind of thing. But actually hadn't thought about all the 50 million steps that come beyond it. And I kind of learned as I went and made, you know, a holy show of mistakes along the way.
What mistakes did you make?
Oh, loads of things. I think the biggest thing for me at the beginning was I was quite naive that everybody has your best interests at heart. And people still call me naive sometimes. I call it trying to be positive. So my first manufacturer was based in the UK, actually. And, you know, I was this 22-year-old who had loads of ambition about what I wanted, but probably, you know, I had no benchmarks behind me to say, I'm going to sell this amount of units and I can do this for you. But they did take a chance on me, which is very kind, because many places didn't even respond to me at the time, which I understand because I was coming from nothing. But about 6 months into our partnership, when I had launched the first two rounds of the product, I kind of felt like they were taking advantage of me a bit. And I just knew that there was this whole thinking of like, who's this 22, 23-year-old blonde coming over here? She doesn't really know anything. And I remember sitting in a meeting with them, and I all of a sudden just got this like overcome of confidence. And I was like, listen, I'm going to go direct to supply myself because I can absolutely do this. And you're going to regret losing me as a client. And it was kind of like, no worries, pet, or like little girl. Do you know that whole attitude? And I walked out and never looked back. And it's funny because I don't like to have regrets, like a lot of people in business would always call them lessons or learnings. And I do believe they are, because if I hadn't met them, I would have been slower to start, because not every factory would be open to starting with someone who has no benchmarks. But at the same time, it was a massive learning and a mistake, I suppose, in the sense that they weren't the right person to work with. But you kind of have to go through them to know who to avoid for future.
And for someone who doesn't know, tell us about the first product and what it was in your mind. You said you had an idea and it was fixed.
So it was a funny one for me because I'd obviously worked for global brands. Like at the time, MAC was the absolute mecca. I loved my job there. So I was spoiled for choice in my kit and also in who I worked for. So I knew that if I brought something to market, like there was no way it could be subsidiary to what I used in my kit because it wouldn't make any sense. So for me, when I used to stand on the MAC counter and people come in and say, hi, I'm looking for a powder. And I'd be like, no problem. Here's 32 options. What powder would you like? And I just felt like everything at the time made things quite complicated. So this is back to when, say, contouring first hit the scene and you've got like 16 brushes, three sponges, five foundations, two concealers later, wham, bam, you're done in an hour and 45 minutes. No one has that time, Makeup by Mario and Kim Kardashian, although we'd like to. So I really took the angle of simplifying makeup and kind of have done to this day. So the first product was like a trio, and it was a bronzer, a cream highlight and a powder highlight. kind of like your contouring kit in one step with a double-ended brush. And the double-ended brush was deliberate because, again, I had done a lot of teaching, and that was the best, most invaluable thing I could have done before a brand, because I was hearing the same complaints again and again from customers in front of me. And I was like, tell me now, what do you find difficult? So two things, the brush people would use would always be too big. It would go blotchy, it would go too dark, and they would find contouring very difficult, or they would imagine it to be the 16-step process, which it didn't have to be. So that's kind of where Sculpted came from, because as naive as it sounds, when I launched that first two products, I hadn't thought beyond that. So I was naming those two products more so than what this whole brand was going to be. And then fast forward 4 years, it ended up becoming something bigger.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
So you said you've never taken a loan, you didn't take investors. So how did you fund it? Was it savings from your work?
Yeah, I was quite diligent. Again, probably going back subconsciously to the fear of mom losing money or struggling a lot. Like, you know, again, a lot of people did during recessions. So I was always very careful. And so when I knew kind of around my second, third year in college that I was going to fund myself directly after college, didn't know necessarily it was going to be the brand yet, but I knew I wasn't going to go and find a position in other companies, I would start saving then. So little bits, but I was always a very good saver.
And when you say very good saver, yeah. I think of it almost as quite a romantic thing in my head. Again, a bit, little bit cinematic, like, you know, other people are going out and you're like, no, I'm going to work instead. But genuinely, there are massive sacrifices that you have to make to save.
I suppose rationalizing your money, because when you're young and you're earning for the first time, like I remember my first paycheck, I went out and bought every sort of clothing you can imagine, a radio, everything, like completely treated myself, which you absolutely should do. So I think it's more at that age when, you know, all your friends are maybe buying things for nights out, or you're spending this, or you're being foolish there, that you have to be more mature around how you're using it. So that was probably the most difficult part. But for me, the biggest savior was I set up a direct debit that took it out before I saw my paycheck. So if I had let it go a week or two into the month, it was gone. So it was like, if it's gone before I realize, then it can't affect me.
Do you find it quite hard to spend money now?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, and you know what? I never did. I was always a spender. Okay. I just was very good at spending what I knew I wasn't saving.
So as the brand advanced, when were the moments when you thought, this is going well, this is fantastic, this is going to fly? And when were moments when you thought, oh my God, I'm going to have to change this completely?
When I think about the first few days, you know, the cliche of seeing your product on shelf for the first time, that was both completely overwhelming and completely exciting, because it was like, oh my God, I made it. And then it was like, oh my God, I need to make sure this sells. And you're instantly met with the reality of what you've actually done. So little bits like that along the way were super cool. For me, when we first launched into Boots was a massive milestone.
So when it first went onto the shelves and you saw it, did it sell instantly?
It did, thank God. Obviously, you know, yeah, there was only two products versus like 60 something we have now. So it's slower, but it's all about, I think, the momentum that you build. And I think that's something that I'm trying to remind myself all the time, because, you know, we have a great business in Ireland in our domestic market. We're slowly growing in the UK. The UK is so different to what I could have imagined. You know, you think it's just a hop, skip across the water. No, it's not. They're very different. And it's so exciting.
How are they different?
I think it's just the sheer vastness of the UK. See, you're dealing with so many more people, so many different people. I think in Ireland, it's actually quite small, which we take for granted when we live there. But like, you know, someone's cousin's twice removed granny probably knew someone in the brand who supports someone, or, you know, there's a real, go on, you're Irish, fair play to you. And don't get me wrong, the UK have been unbelievably welcoming, but I think it's just the overwhelmingness of this is huge compared to what we're used to dealing with. So you just have to up everything in terms of how much you're shouting about it, how much you're being seen, you know, all those things, which is natural when you're trying to break into a bigger market. But I think that feeling of the momentum slowly builds. So just because you're not reaching everything right now is what you have to remind yourself on, which is what I'm doing at the moment with everything in terms of our growth. There are so many moments at the beginning, to be totally honest, where things go really badly. And the biggest thing by a mile that I have learned in business is not something specific around a P&L sheet or forecasting stock. It's actually that issues come all the time. The minute you think there's no issue, you're wrong. Something is coming around the corner. But it's that the vastness of the issues gets smaller, or your perception of them gets smaller, so that they get easier to manage.
And what do you find the best way to handle it is? Because some people are, say, stoically about emailing and, you know, keeping everything sort of in one format. Are you someone who picks up the phone and goes...
100%. I'm very much a people person. I really missed having my team around me over lockdown, for example, because I really feed off people's energy. I like working with people that I like. I know it all can't be rosy, but I'm very much someone who, you know, I need to get on with you as a person. But the biggest thing for me is when a problem happens, it's straight away, let's not dwell on what happened. Let's not cry for ourselves. What's the solution? Sometimes the solution isn't clear. Sometimes you need to sit in a boardroom and, you know, really rack your brains at everyone around you. But there's always a way out of it, even though it doesn't seem like it at the time.
And 4 years in to this product company that's growing and growing, your name is on the packaging. It's right there. So you are the figurehead. You're the person, you know, you're Amy.
Yeah,
so they are. Amy. You're Amy. How do you feel sometimes about having a business where your name is on the business? So you represent the business, and then you go to things and people are like, this is you, and maybe you feel that you have to have perfect makeup or that you have to wear makeup and things like, oh, do you feel that indeed?
Do you know what? I think if you had asked me this when I was 20, not that the brand existed, but say hypothetically, I would have been super conscious of how I looked and how I appeared and all this. Firstly, I don't really overthink the whole element that my name is on the packaging. It is something that I'm becoming more aware of in the sense of the business growing and people kind of saying to me, you need to be mindful of your own succession here. I don't plan on leaving the business, so I'm totally happy to stay here and I absolutely love it. But in terms of new markets and stuff, it is the first time I've probably become aware of the fact that I'm on it, because I just take it for granted at home, which sounds really odd. So that for me isn't a huge deal. In terms of how I am and how people receive me and kind of like, you know, the perfect makeup or how I look, I would say I'm the worst person for that, because I would honestly go out with my t-shirt back to front and it wouldn't bother me. It would kill my boyfriend. He would be like sweating. But I think the older I get, ironically, the more I reverse. Like when I used to go into Mac when I was younger, I was like done up to the absolute nines. I could have gone to a nightclub straight away after. Whereas I would say wear makeup twice a week now, unless I'm doing an event or whatever it might be. So I think I very much come more around to accepting myself as myself, which has definitely helped to ease the pressure of being the Amy behind Sculpted by Amy. Yeah.
So what does your life look like now?
Life is quite busy. You know, work for me is my whole centre. I absolutely love it. I have definitely worked out the work-life balance a lot better, which I was really bad at about a year and a half ago.
So what does that mean for you? Does it mean switching your phone off?
Yeah, sometimes I might switch the phone off, or I might just stay off stories for the day and just not give anyone any updates because there's nothing really interesting going on anyway. But it also is incorporating maybe more exercise, taking more time out, like little things, like basic life things, like cooking at home instead of grabbing food on the go, sitting down to watch a show instead of catching up on work that actually can wait until tomorrow. All those like really small adjustments, but like are huge for me and my own life.
So it's making the time in your life, like scheduling your life into your day.
Exactly.
So what exercise do you do?
So I love F45, which is like a HIIT workout place. I took up running, who didn't, during COVID. I actually got a stupid knee injury in February just before I was doing a half marathon distance virtually. So I'm going to get back on that. I've been on holidays for a week, so I'm like, I need to get back in the zone. And Pilates, I really like.
Okay.
Yeah. So interesting fact, I had my spine straightened when I was 17. So I had scoliosis. Yeah. So I've got 20 metal rods down it and like a little zip of a scar.
Okay.
And I grew 2 inches, but I have zero flexibility. So I actually find Pilates is brilliant because I was given no rehab after it.
Did it affect your posture?
It did. So it was picked up when I was about 13. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to about 17 and coming out of puberty, I took a huge growth spurt and that massively affected the curve in the spine. So one side of me was like super curvilicious because it was jarring my ribs out. And then one side was like a flat boy. Wow. Yeah. So I find Pilates brilliant for that.
That must have been hard at that age.
Do you know what? I think it was probably easier to do it then than it would have been any time.
Yeah.
And it also gets more dangerous the older you get.
And tell me about other things then. Like, what is your way of winding down aside from watching telly?
This sounds so odd, right? Mm. But I have this absolute new appreciation for air. Like air. Just fresh air.
I think loads of people get that. A, when they get older, and B, because of COVID. Suddenly everyone's like, I want to go outside.
I really feel in the last year and a half. So if I have a day where like, I would walk a lot to work now, which I absolutely love, something that was never part of my routine, you know, before last autumn. Mm-hmm. And I really miss it now if I have a few days a week where I don't. So if I say got in my car, drove from the gym to work, sat in my office all day, I will be dying to get out for a walk. Mm-hmm. It's the strangest thing. So yeah, love reading and love walking and love watching shows at night.
Are you a bather or a showerer?
A showerer. Oh, in and out.
That tends to be quite a productive person. I'm a bather. I like a good bath.
Some of my friends are amazing. Like,
they'll have a bath. They'll do their moisturising, all this. And I'm like, I would love to do that. I just would never do that.
What about perfume?
When I think about it.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not a diehard.
No, okay. And I should be. Sometimes I forget.
So on the 2 days a week that you're wearing makeup during the day, what do you put on?
I would keep it quite simple. I would generally do a light base, a bit of concealer, love cream blush, always have.
Yeah.
Cream highlight was obviously in the first product, has never left me. A bit of lip liner, a bit of brow gel and mascara.
And if you're doing a big night out makeup, what do you add?
I might add a bit of kind of shimmer shadow. I might do a flick with a bit of eyeshadow or a cold pencil. And generally just kind of up the ante of other areas. So add a little bit more of things rather than going super dark. I think, you know, you see it on Instagram as well. Everyone is kind of reversed to a more natural-esque look, which ironically was always what we would call the sculpted look. So it fits completely with ours.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're just perfect for you, right?
I know.
Do you still do anyone else's makeup?
Yeah, obviously over the last year or so, there haven't really been many occasions. I've stepped back from wedding makeup in terms of the amount that I used to do, but I love doing makeup. You know, I'd hate to lose that creative side when you are a creative person. So hopefully now as events pick up and some special people who ask me to do their makeup, I'll be around.
Do you find also that it gives you new ideas for products when you're working with other people?
Yeah. Even just doing different things gives you ideas. You know, it sounds so weird, but going on transport, like you're removed from your general day-to-day setting, which is your house, your office, which you go to every single day. I find ideas come then. Even me strolling around London, I'm like, that's such a good idea.
Totally. There's a whole theory around it. My headmaster used to talk about it as saintly stupidity, where people thought that to be the best Christian, because it was related to the church ever, you'd have to read the scriptures loads and like just sit there reading the Bible basically. But he said actually someone was saying it was stupid because you get a lot more from going into nature and living and then applying that to whatever your discipline is, not taking that into any area of life. Like I always find that when I'm gardening or doing something around the garden, I have really good ideas for writing.
Yeah.
It just suddenly I'm like, oh, actually the gardener's just presented a way of thinking about something and it's completely different, but it's way better.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Right, I'm going to finish by asking you the 3 questions my guests. What to your mind has been your greatest triumph, career or personal?
I'm going to have to go career because it has literally painted a lot of my life to date, and that would be launching Sculpted.
And keeping it going.
And obviously the plans that we have hopefully will execute themselves.
What one piece of advice would you give your younger self?
Oh, definitely to try and not care as much what people think. Again, I would say that I was, you know, particularly to my teenage self, I was quite kind of easygoing and happy to go on with the flow like I would be still now. But I think it's quite an inherent thing that runs in our family where I'd be so conscious of what others think or overthinking things.
Think about you or think about things you're doing?
Both, I think. Yeah, like how you said something or, you know, you would just overdo it really mentally, and it's not good.
I always think of that meme where people talk about the 3 a.m. brain, where suddenly you remember everything you've ever done wrong, and it like, and it all crashes in from like when you were like 15 to today, and you're like, I didn't know I still remembered this stuff.
On the night you're supposed to have an early night.
Exactly. Yeah, it does happen. Right, three people dead or alive who you'd like to have dinner with.
Okay, first one is a basic choice, and it's Margot Robbie, because I think she is so beautiful. I like to just stare at her while she was having her dessert. And I think she's very chilled, from what I gather.
I think she seems really nice.
Oh my God, so do I.
Normal and nice.
Yeah, normal is a good word. Normal. Yeah, what a compliment.
While looking incredible.
I would love, again, probably a very cliche one, but Oprah Winfrey, because I think she has just spoken and would have so many stories.
Do you think she'd tell them, though? That always makes me wonder, you know, when you're interviewing or talking to
someone. I think you'd give her a few wines and she would. And also, because I have this weird fascination with the royal family, I would like Meghan Markle to be there, given all the recent controversy.
When you say you have a thing about the royal family, is it all the royals or
Princess Diana
in particular?
I love her.
Okay. And why Diana in particular?
I just have this infatuation with what happened and how her life transpired. And obviously, I thought she seemed lovely and was obviously beautiful. I would say I've fallen down so many documentary holes watching and re-watching what happened. I've also just noticed I only have three females. I do love males too.
Yeah, yeah, it's fine, it's fine. But why Meghan then? If you're into the royal family, why her?
I just am so fascinated by her. I'm so torn whether I feel she is very real or whether she's a very real actress. So I would love to just, and don't get me wrong, I feel awful of what's happened on both sides.
Yeah.
Here's me getting into a full royal.
This is the conversation I have literally with all my friends. Like, at least once a week, we have a conversation about this.
So just, you know, when you see someone in the flesh and you sit across them, you get a good vibe for what's going on. So I'd love to do that.
And I'm completely fascinated by the idea that, like, how Harry's responded to it all and what it's done to him.
It's awful, really.
It's awful. Yeah, it's awful. But it's also because I think we've all grown up with this family as like our kind of weird family that we don't know.
It's completely bizarre. Like, my best friend thinks I am crazy for buying so much into it.
No, I'm just fascinated by it too. I think it's because, it's like a soap opera with real people, which is an awful thing to say in theory, but it is sort of set up like that. It's not like it's not like I've just sort of sat there pressed to a window. It's you know, they've come.
And they are humans.
So. Of course they're humans too. So yeah, I completely agree, actually. That would be fascinating. Maybe you could
I'll let you know how it goes.
I'm going to add one more question on a personal level. If your brand were to completely disappear for some reason and there was one product that you could save for you, for your personal use, what would it be?
Okay, that is a very, very good question that I've never been asked. Can I give you two answers?
Yes, okay.
Okay. So one for me personally would be our bronze-based face tan, because as we all noted from my rant along this podcast, I love face tan. But no, for me, it's just that little bit of ingredient. It allows me to go makeup-free and feel super confident because I've got a bit of tint on my skin and I'm happy with my natural skin, all good. The other product I would save, because I genuinely feel that it's very special, would be our Tint and Glow, which is our new kind of tinted moisturizer-esque. We call it a skin enhancer, SPF and all those kind of goodness in it. But I just think it literally, as the name suggests, tints your skin but has a radiance built in the formula.
My friend came over last week and she was like, I don't like wearing skin makeup, but I want to wear like a little bit because like no one, whose skin is perfect, right? Yeah, she's got really great skin, but she wanted something. And she was like, but also I don't want to look so tired because I look tired now. I'm like in my mid-30s. And I was like, Tint and Glow. She went and bought it and she literally sent me a message being like, oh my God, I love this. It's so amazing. Nice. Well, it's exactly that. So you're completely right. It's a solution to like having a little bit of coverage, not loads, and a lot of glow, but not grease. And it's like, it's just the perfect kind of
thing. That was quite hard to do, to be honest. I had a few late nights worrying about the glow levels.
I can imagine. Glow is a really hard thing to get right because it tips too far and it's a useless product because it just slips around. Yeah. Anyway, I agree with those two.
So I cheated, but thank you.
Okay, right. Well, thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Isn't Amy great? I could have just carried on having a gossip about the royals and all sorts for a lot longer. So I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed chatting to her. And if you have, please do leave a comment and subscribe. There will be a new episode out next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.